And the second stage is what we call, traditionally, the suppression of the five hindrances. The five hindrances represent five unhealthy, negative psychological states, especially emotional states. The first of these is what we call desire or thirst or craving for sensuous experience. That you may for a while shut out the external world. You may not be looking at anything or listening to anything, but as you sit there, concentrated as you are, a little sort of tremor may arise in the mind based on a recollection of a previous experience, and that will lead the mind, as it were, insensibly back towards the original sense object. And there will be, along with that, a desire for the experience of, the enjoyment of, that sense object. So this is what we call the hindrance of the desire or craving for sensuous experience. And this is very difficult to get rid of, very difficult to eliminate, because it goes right deep down into the unconscious mind, right down to the roots of the mind, as it were. In this second stage of meditation experience, there's no possibility of eradicating the hindrances, but they have to be temporarily suppressed, temporarily held down, if further progress is to be made. So this is the first hindrance to be suppressed or held down, or held in abeyance, as it were, the desire for sensuous experience. And then ill will, anger or hatred or antagonism in any of its forms. If while you're sitting there, if while you're trying to concentrate, trying to meditate, there's any residue in your conscious mind of antagonism towards anybody, if you're irritated or upset, you will not be able to make any further progress in your meditation. So the hindrance of ill will also has to be suppressed, has to be held in abeyance, as it were, at that particular time. And then the third hindrance is what we call sloth and torpor. This is a very terrible hindrance indeed. It probably holds people back much more than either the desire for sensuous experience or ill will. Because as you sit there trying to meditate, you may find that your mind is quite free from desire for any particular thing. You don't particularly want a cup of tea, or you don't particularly want to be more warm and more cozy, and you may not be conscious of any ill will towards anybody. You may not be feeling, at least positively, murderous towards anybody. You'll be feeling moderately affectionate. But sloth and torpor, that's quite a different proposition. A sloth and torpor may overwhelm you nevertheless. In Pali, these are called tina midha. And the distinction is a quite interesting one. Tina, or sloth, represents a sort of physical sluggishness. And the midha, the torpor, represents a sort of psychological inertia and stagnation. So a sort of stagnation of both body and mind, a sort of dullness, a sort of deadness, a stiffness, a lack of resilience, a sort of, well, a gravitation-like force which is sort of pulling you down all the time and preventing you from making any further progress. So this also is a hindrance to be overcome. Incidentally, I should remark perhaps at this stage that these five hindrances by themselves can provide us very easily with material for a whole talk. But we are having, in this connection this evening, just to skip over them very, very briefly, very quickly indeed. So let's come on to the fourth hindrance. And this is a hindrance which is the opposite of sloth and torpor. This is restlessness and anxiety. This is hurry and flurry. If you do manage to get out of this state of sloth and torpor, you'll probably find that you get restless and start worrying. You fly from one extreme, in other words, to the other. So this is a state where you're always on edge about something, always nervy, always worried, always anxious, always looking at things with a furrowed brow, as it were, wondering what on earth is going to happen to you next, what disaster or tragedy is going to strike you down the next minute. And lots of people do go around like this. You can see it from the expression on their faces. They're always expecting something terrible to happen. And of course, sometimes it does happen. But in general, the hindrance is that of restlessness. You can't settle down. one thought chases after another, and you're anxious. So this is a hindrance to be suppressed, to be held in abeyance. If you want success in meditation, you must be calm, you must be peaceful, you must settle down, you mustn't worry about anything. You must leave your worries just outside at the door of the meditation room. In India, as you know, when people enter a temple or a shrine, they leave their shoes outside the door. And this is said to be symbolical. It's said to symbolize the leaving outside of all one's cares and worries and troubles when you go into the meditation room or into the temple or the shrine. If your wife is sick, well, never mind. Forget about it for 1 hour. If your children aren't doing too well at school, never mind. Forget about it for 1 hour. Just put it down. Just drop it. I'm sure those of you who know anything about Zen find that the little phrase putting it down, or putting her down in particular, has all sorts of associations, very meaningful ones. So much for restlessness and anxiety. These also constitute a hindrance which must be allowed to die down, to sink down, to die away before one can successfully meditate. And lastly, doubt. This is vichikitsa. It isn't doubt in the sense of just wondering whether something is true or false. It's doubt in the sense of indecisiveness, unwillingness to commit oneself, wondering at the time of the meditation, well, is this going to do me any good? Or is there any meaning in meditation? Or am I really going to get anywhere? Or am I not rather wasting my time and thinking that you're rather a fool just sitting there with your legs crossed and you don't really think you're going to get nirvana in 6 easy lessons? And this sort of thing is doubt, indecision. So this is suppressed or held in abeyance by a firm determination, by a conviction that as a result of the practice you are going to get somewhere. And this vichikitsa, this doubt, this indecisiveness, has been placed last for a very definite reason, is probably the last one you get rid of. Sometimes people come to me and they say, well, I've been meditating in the class for a year, I suppose I'm doing quite well. Well, I do sometimes wonder, why on earth I do it? I can't help wondering whether it's any good, whether I'm not wasting my time, whether I better read books on Buddhism, or whether I better just give up Buddhism altogether. But this is the lurking remnants of vichikitsa, doubt and indecisiveness. So this also is a hindrance to be overcome. If this is present at the time of meditation, no further progress is possible. It just undermines you. So this is the second stage of meditation experience. Freedom from, at least temporary freedom from, freedom for the period of the practice at least, of these 5 hindrances of desire for sensuous experience, ill will, sloth and torpor, and restlessness and anxiety, and lastly, doubt. Unless the mind is free from these, at least for the time being, no meditation, no further meditation experience is possible. Of course, I know when people come along to meditation classes at the end of a busy day, in the course of which no doubt their minds have been in turmoil of one kind or another, it isn't easy just to settle down and allow these 5 hindrances to die away. It takes time. And sometimes people say after meditating for an hour, or at least sitting there for an hour, when the bell rings to mark the end of the session, then they feel that, well, they're just about ready to begin, because it's only then, or it's only by that time, that all these hindrances, all these wild and wandering thoughts have died down. And this is one of the reasons why we find a retreat so helpful. When one can get away for a whole weekend, a whole week, even 10 days, as we do at Easter time, for instance, because then one finds when one is living in a pleasant, a congenial, a natural environment, when one sees trees every day and hears birds every day, actually singing every morning, and when it's all peaceful and you don't hear the traffic, and with a bit of luck there are no planes roaring overhead, and when you're with people who share your own ideals and with whom you can talk on Buddhism, and you do a little reading and you do some meditation, then you find that of their own accord almost, these hindrances die away. So that when you do go to sit for meditation when the bell rings, then you find in the retreat that the hindrances are already just not there. They've already gone. and you can get on with your meditation from there, as from this second stage.